The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
PPI up and CPI down. Consumer sentiment hits its highest point since 2004. Financials break their weekly winning streak, plus a look at next week's earnings results and the calendar. All this and much more on episode number 530 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, welcome to this edition, this episode, this week's Disciplined Investor Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Horowitz, and I'll be here talking about a variety of informational items such as the earnings week ahead, as well as all the things that we need to know about for markets in the upcoming weeks and sometime in the future. We talk about all this, economics, we talk about investments, financials, we talk about alt currencies, we talk about all sorts of things on the show. So thanks for joining me each and every week where we have the opportunity to spend some time together and go over all the important things you need to know and a bit of education as well. Hopefully you spend some time here learning. I always do, especially from our guests. We don't have a guest today, so we'll have a little bit of a shorter show. I wanted to touch on a few items and just really get into what's happening because it is a very, very important time in markets. As we discussed with Howard Silverblatt last week, this is a major test for markets as we are entering into earnings season. So we're going to get to that, plus a variety of other things. A couple things I want to mention, though, before we even start with that, is that we had a pretty busy week last week. We pretty much put the finishing edits on the quarterly market and economic commentary that we put out each and every quarter at Horowitz & Company. And we also had two webinars last week with Trigger Chart to finished off the three-part series on getting excited about trading. You know, we have these really cool tools that we put out for TradeStation. And we talked about each of the various indicators and discussed their uses, how to use them, and really how to find those winning trades. So if you want to take a look, we'll put a link on the show notes for this episode. If you want to look at what's going on with that, this three-part webinar is really a cool introduction to the various indicators that we have that are based on market profile and our key reversal indicator, our aileron, our commander series suite, all that. So check that out over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com or go right to triggercharts.com and check that out. So it was a pretty interesting week when it comes to economics. We did see that in the beginning of the week, towards the beginning of the week, we saw the PPI number come out, which is the wholesale inflation number. And we've been wondering how long it's going to take until we see that there's going to be a significant uptick in inflation, as we had seen for some time, a pretty good level of jobs numbers coming into the markets. And we knew that with the dollar down for the last 10 months or so, that the potential for inflation starting to creep in on top of all of the stimulative actions that were taken, the high consumer confidence, the good GDP, it was a matter of time till, yeah, inflation should start picking up. Obviously, one of the biggest quandaries from the Fed's perspective, because they're wondering also, what is going on? Why aren't we seeing any more significance in terms of the inflation numbers with all the money that they have amassed between their low rates and the quantitative easing programs? And not only that, the quantitative easing programs, the low rates around the world. I mean, it's a mystery. It's a mystery across the board. But I think it shows us a couple of things. First of all, economics in practice is not the same as economic theory, because most of what the Fed is going off of is economic theory. We know that they're academics and they haven't had this kind of situation, nor have they utilized these types of experimental methodologies to try to revive an economy before. Yeah, they've tried some of them, but not all of these. Negative interest rates, clearly not, that we're seeing in Europe and Japan. Although Mario Draghi did take a victory lap last week and said that he was pretty happy about the fact that, yeah, negative interest rates are actually working. So, bravo. I think it's a little more than that. I think there is a question as to whether or not the economies here abroad would have actually recovered a lot better if we didn't go to these extreme measures. Maybe it would have been a little bit slower, but maybe then again, we would have seen a much more significant move and a quicker recovery if you consider the fact that some of the recovery that's happening at the levels and the changes in the recovery have been so in a rising interest rate and a rising trend towards normalization by the Fed here. We know that the Fed is the driver of global economics, generally speaking, because, well, we're the biggest economy in the world, and perhaps there is something to be said about that. And in addition to that, that most other developed nations around the world are going to follow along in our footsteps, as we've seen. We've seen that time and time again. So there is something to be said about whether, and a question to ask about whether this recovery would have been even better if the Fed actually decided to raise rates and normalize and discuss the normalization process sometime even further back. I mean, the evidence is not crystal clear just yet, but there is something to say about how there is a really high correlation in terms of time of when the Fed started talking about raising rates and the recovery in the markets on an actual basis, not from some of just simply the hope fors of fiscal policy, which could be something to be said about this, tax reform, lesser regulations, things like that. But for now, we'll have to see what's going to happen because we did see the PPI pick up, as I mentioned. CPI is still the head scratcher. It's close to the levels in which the Fed is putting up the warning flag, about 1.73% year over year. Still not at that 2% level that they're looking for. But it really doesn't necessarily look like they're going to back off from their next rate hike in December. They seem to be pretty much all on board, with the exception of a few at the Fed, about raising rates again in the next go-round in December. I do think that some of the CPI numbers and softness recently will be transitory. We did see a spike in gas prices, but wage inflation or wage growth picked up in that last employment report. And that's something that will really, it should at least, go into the CPI calculations coming up. A couple of things I want to mention about that, and we'll get into some of the discussion about what's going on a few other economic areas, what's going to happen on earnings next week, or at least what is expected for earnings next week. One of the things we wrote about in this quarter's economic commentary was the big question about who's going to be the next Fed chair. Now, you can go over to a site, for example, like Predict It. There's a few of these sites out there. These are actual, it's amazing. You can bet on anything. You can go bet on, if Tillerson's going to resign, or if Trump is going to be the first to fire on North Korea, or just crazy things. But one of the things they have is a poll that, again, it's you can bet on this, but it's a poll on what and who is going to be the next Fed chair. What I found interesting was very recently, towards the end of the week, Jerome Powell jumped up into first place. Kevin Warsh was there for a while. Let me just read down the list to you, and we'll talk about what this means and what it could mean. But in the favorite right now, out of all the different people that are on this particular list, is Jerome Powell with about 48%. Warsh with about 25%, Yellen 13%, Gary Cohn 8%, Kashkari with 5%, John Taylor with 3%, Glenn Hubbard 1%, Honig 1%, Lindsay 1%, and John Allison, who I don't even know who that is, at 1%. Now, what is probably most interesting about this is that the top is Powell, Warsh, and Yellen. Powell, Warsh, and Yellen. Now, why wouldn't, if everything is working so splendidly, Janet Yellen be reappointed? I think some of that has to do with the fact that President Trump is trying to sweep out all the old, even though if things are working, just put everything under his brand, if you will, and have everything under his name, have everything under a new regime to see if there can actually be a major change and if some of the areas are holding things back. Get rid of just everything from the past and move forward. Janet Yellen, even by the president's commentary, has done a very good job in terms of what she's supposed to be doing. Yes, we have been at odds with the Fed for some time, and I've been talking about how I think they were really late to the party in terms of raising rates, and that was based on my whole thesis of the lack of velocity of money for some time. And the notion that I felt very, very much that if we did increase rates, it would bring a lot more people into the idea that, you know, we better do something because before rates start really moving very much upward in a very fast manner, we really should do what we can to lock in, get the loans that we want, expand the business. Money's never going to be as cheap as it is today. And by continually stating that they're going to keep rates very low, it made the general environment think that, well, I got some time here. I'm not too worried about this. I can let things go for some time. So I think that this idea that, well, we want to have someone who is relatively somewhat dovish on rates, doesn't seem to think that they're going to push things too rapidly in one direction or the other. And that, of course, is a discussion of making sure markets are happy. That's the undertone of all of that. And you look at Powell, who has pretty much been vanilla. Powell's been there and is kind of okay on some regulation, not on others. Wants to keep rates down, believes that we can keep rates down. Warsh, on the other hand, back in 2011, when he was on the Fed, thought that, well, rates should be, or before he left the Fed, right before that, that rates should be much higher. We should stop all the quantitative easing programs, stop all the stimulus, and that we're going to increase inflation to levels that are going to be just extraordinary. Now, if in fact Warsh was the Fed chair back then, what would have happened? Think about that. I mean, we'd still have no inflation. Rates would have been higher. I mean, we really needed to have this kind of stimulus after the financial meltdown for probably through 2000, I would say 14. I'm not quite sure about 2015, 16, and 17 here to have these extraordinary levels of rates and such low rates here and have such an amazing amount of assets on the balance sheet of the Fed. But okay, we have it, so let's not get too carried away about this. But Warsh and Powell seem to be the front runners right here. And I would say that, you know, Warsh would probably be a lot more aligned to a degree of what President Trump has been talking about, whether or not he's going to actually pull the trigger on something, and someone who may, in fact, be a lot more hawkish. That's the question. I think that's where Powell has jumped to the lead in the last week or two. Now, I don't know about you, but it's going to be very interesting to see. And I'm pretty curious of how this is all going to play out. I think that if Powell is actually appointed, or Yellen is reappointed, for that matter, I think that, again, if we're using these as the top three in the overall standings right at this exact moment now, I think that Powell probably would be neutral for markets, bond markets and equity markets. I don't think there'll be too much concern about Powell at all. Now, Kevin Warsh, on the other hand, I think that you would see probably a significant drop in the price of bonds as rates rise in the thought that he's a lot more hawkish. And the problem also is, you know, how are we going to play with all these parties, Powell, Warsh, and Yellen? Yellen, clearly the number one position in terms of keeping very high pressure on the financial industry and keeping a significant amount of regulation. So that's probably why Yellen has dropped down a bit. So the favorite looks like Powell right now. We're going to watch this. But you could chart this and see what this happened. I mean, Powell went from about 35% to 48% over the last week, where Janet Yellen has been progressively getting lower and lower in the standings. Gary Cohn is the fourth in that list, as I mentioned, and keeps on moving lower too. You can actually look at this and chart it over on Predict It. But just something fun to have in the back there, whether or not this actually plays out or not. The one thing that I will tell you is that what I do like about this and don't like about this at the same time is the fact that you can bet on it. Therefore, people are putting up money, not just, you know, you can't just put a fake poll answer in here and then hope for the best and see if you can sway things by maybe having bots utilize the polling process. You're going to put up money here, and that's where the favorites come out. It's like a horse race. That's what it is. So anyway, I mentioned that the financials last week were the first to come out with earnings, and we saw Bank of America, and we saw Citi, and we saw Wells Fargo actually come out, JP Morgan. And generally speaking, aside from put Wells Fargo aside for a second, the three that we talked about otherwise had pretty good numbers. Their trading numbers were down again, but some of the internals in terms of the revenues and earnings growth were pretty good. So they're sustaining the ability to make money. Their stocks did okay. However, for the week, financials were down. And that probably could be very simply that this was a, you know, buy the rumor and sell the news kind of event, which we see so many times. Almost every earnings season that I can remember, you see a lot of this that goes on. And Wells Fargo, obviously very weak and has a lot of hangover due to the fraudulent bank account and all the other things that are going on with Wells Fargo, the whole shakeup of the management team and all. Wells Fargo didn't do well, down about 3% or so after their report came out. But the financials ticked down overall, the XLF, about almost 1% for the week. Not a big deal after the nice run-up they had over the past several weeks. So I'm not really going to put the kibosh on them right now, but we'll see if that trend continues or it is simply a sell the news type of event. But earnings coming up next week. If this week was the start, we know that the next week after that is pretty heavy in terms of earnings. About 65 S&P 500 components are going to be offering their results next week. And then we have about a good... I would say this list is about 100 or so. There's about 100 on this list of total companies that are going to be reporting. But I want to tell you the ones that I'm going to be looking at and the ones that I think are going to be the companies that are going to shape some of the things to come. Now, if this week coming up is heavy in terms of earnings announcements, the next week is going to be a monster. Hundreds and hundreds of names will come out. But let me just give you the list and what to watch that I'm looking at least. On Monday, we have Netflix expecting earnings about 32 cents on about $2.93 billion of revenue. Now, that will be up from about 12 cents a year ago. Now, one of the things we know that is going on with Netflix, they kind of in a way followed the Amazon protocol where they took the first number of years with a very highly anticipated growth potential and very high stock pricing and used a lot of the money they had through either money in that they stuck on the side or maybe bond issuing or whatever else they did here, like many companies do, and they built out their entire infrastructure. Amazon, for example, for years was building out their warehouses and data centers and just they were just spending incredible amounts of money and not showing profitability. But still, that didn't stop investors from believing that the future was very bright. Netflix is kind of doing the same thing. They are spending a tremendous amount of money on original content. We know about that. And they're also expanding their entire footprint around the world, and that costs a lot of money to get into a lot of places. And they've been doing this for some time. And they just raised their prices. That's a quick cha-ching. That's easily easily one of the, if it's accepted by the markets and there is no thought that there will be a tremendous amount of churn or people unsubscribing to the service on their current subscriber base, that's a tremendous amount of money that they will now take in as revenues. So it is possible that Netflix is getting towards the end of their massive money spend here, at least towards the tail end of it, although some of their stuff is reoccurring, versus Amazon, which has warehouses that are one time, or you know, we can block out how much it's going to cost for all these different distribution centers. Netflix will have to continue to pay for the original content for some time to come. But they are going to be profitable. Their PE ratio and their valuation is off the charts. We know that. But it is possible that we'll be seeing that Netflix, if they can pull this off, we'll start to see some decent gains and positive EPS numbers. So we're going to watch that on Monday. Now, on Tuesday, before the market opens, we're going to look at companies like CSX, looking for about 51 cents versus 48. Goldman Sachs, who knows the comparison here, looking at 416 versus 488. Harley Davidson, they already warned a couple of times here, looking for 40 cents versus a year ago, 64 cents on almost $1 billion of revenue. Johnson & Johnson got that nice tailwind that we know about due to the dollar being so weak, looking for $1.80 versus $1.68. Then the other one I was looking at is United Healthcare. After what we saw with President Trump's stroke of the pen and taking away some of the payments and the payments to the health insurers last week, we'll see how they play out. But 257 versus 217 a year ago, pretty impressive if they can make that. After the close, we're going to look for IBM. I think we can put that front and center of things here. We're looking at IBM, looking for 328 on 18.6 billion of revenue, a little bit lighter than last period. Let's see here, some other important. There's a bunch of other ones here, but on Wednesday, SuperVal, looking to see how the supermarkets do here. Looking for 36 cents versus 10 cents last period. Alcoa, American Express after the close on Wednesday. American Express looking for $1.48 versus $1.24. eBay looking for 48 cents versus 45. UAL, United Continental, the airline, 210 versus 311. United Rentals looking for $3.03 versus 258. Thursday, BB&T. On Thursday, we have a lot of the smaller banks. So we have BB&T and BNY Mellon, and we got FNB Bank Corp. Let's see what else. Home Bank Shares, Key Corp. But we also have coming up Philip Morris, and there's been some interesting rulings there in terms of nicotine. We'll see how that plays out. $1.38 versus $1.25. Verizon looking for, let's see here, Verizon. 98 cents versus $1.01. Winnebago Industries. Looking for a big increase, 69 cents versus 40. And then after the close, Intuitive Surgical. Intuitive Surgical, $1.99 versus 6.19. I'm not sure how that's going to compare. PayPal, 43 cents versus 35. Skechers, 44 cents versus 42. And then on Friday, we got some important ones. We got General Electric coming in. Now, I've been thinking that maybe it's time to buy GE, but this, we'll see. It definitely looks like it's maybe looking to bottom out and that everybody's pretty much thrown in the towel on this one. So take a look at GE, 49 cents versus 32, Procter & Gamble coming in, Schlumberger coming in. So a big week at hand for earnings. And as Howard Silverblatt said, this is pretty much the make it or break it. One of the most important earnings seasons that he's seen in a while. We'll see how much the companies are talking about buybacks, talking about the currency effects on their bottom lines, talking about revenues, talking about regulations, talking about taxes. A lot of this is going to be in the conference calls. We'll be listening to that. I think you should too, because it's going to be a real good tell on what's going to be going on for the future, but particularly about the buybacks. I'm really interested in seeing what the companies are going to be doing with that, how many will be increasing their buybacks, what the totals will be, and how they... I think it really bodes well for what they feel about the future. Let me just loop back to economics for a second here. I guess I want to just mention that when you look at the economics, and there's been some questions that I've seen from people emailing me and tweeting about some of the economics and the concern about, you know, hey, You know, what do you think about the economy? What's going on here? Are things that good? I mean, we are seeing some really good numbers from the economy. Now, yes, in the past, when you see some of these numbers, you know, where do they go from here is the big question. Do we have the opportunity to see further gains? Is there going to be, you know, a forever at this level? Or is it the calm before the storm? Is it the excitement before everything just goes blah? Now, I could tell you that, well, if we didn't have such an aggressive central bank and Fed, I know we talk about this all the time and it gets pretty boring, but if we didn't have such an aggressive central bank and Fed, not only here, but around the world, I would probably have a different answer to this, or at least a slightly different answer to this. But I tell you something, right now we are seeing that there is a very high level of consumer sentiment. The preliminary number for October came out from the University of Michigan on Friday, and it was the best level since 2004. That's saying something. Now, whether or not people are, I don't know, they're simply, it's a mystery, or it's, they can't figure out what's going on, so they're just being very excited and thinking this is one of the most exciting things ever or not. The bottom line to this all is things are good right now from the perspective of the consumer, from the perspective of the investor. We're seeing that housing prices have reached pre-crisis highs and surpassed them in many areas around the country. We're seeing that, of course, stock markets are reaching record highs. GDP is finally getting past 3%. The unemployment rate is 4.2%. We're seeing that manufacturing numbers and services numbers are all pre-crisis highs. This is all good news. Now, if we didn't have in our memories some of the things that happened in the past, particularly that of, let's call it 2000 and 2008/2009, we may not be thinking, many of us as concerned about, oh, this is all BS and it's all just going to crash upon us. The other thing is be careful when you look at your own personal condition and situation with regard to what your living situation is, what your job's situation is, what your community is doing. That may not be everywhere around the country, whether it's really good or really bad. In other words, if you're in a place that your job is just wonderful, getting raises and bonuses and things are just fantastic. Your company's doing well. Your house price is up. Your savings account is up. If everything looks great, you know, you kind of look outside and you see it, everything with rose-colored glasses to a great degree, be very careful. You're not sure if that's exactly what's happening everywhere around the country. At the same time, if you're sitting there and your job sucks, you hate what you're doing, your company is looking like they're going to do some layoffs coming up. The prospects for the long-term nature of higher wages for yourself and maybe bonuses is not there, and your house is still sitting at a level of price that maybe was 3 years ago or 4 years ago, and you have debt overhanging you, and you know you have your kids living with you and your parents living with you, and your lawnmower is broken, and you just kind of take the list, right? That doesn't mean that that's the same place and same situation everywhere else around the country and around the world. So be very careful about overlaying your situation or maybe even yours and your neighbors, your communities on everywhere. You need to look at this very objectively. So just be very careful that when you look at this, let's take a look at all the numbers and try to look beyond what we saw in the past, beyond what's our own personal situation, and look at these in a holistic manner so that we can find out, well, what's going on. Because I've had conversations with clients that are spooked. Oh, the markets are really high and the valuations, as you've talked about, and I've talked about, are really out of whack. And where do we go from here? Is there a major crash? Now, if we didn't know from major crashes, a la 1987, 2000 through 2002, 2008, 2009. If we didn't know about these, we wouldn't have these in our mind to be thinking about what could happen. And that wouldn't be good either, by the way, because history teaches some great lessons that we need to pay attention to at all times. However, let's not get stuck on believing that everything that had happened will happen, short term or long term. let's not just look at that, oh, we're reaching all-time new highs in the markets, and, well, therefore, we're going to do that forever. Let's not believe that, well, the last few rate increases haven't really hurt anything. As a matter of fact, the market's better for them. Let's not just believe that the next few rate increases will do the same. So when we look at all these things that are coming into play and all the things that we know that have been in the recent and in the anticipated future, let's put it into perspective and think about that. At the same time, realize that this is something that's important, that if you're the only one in a room of 100 people that are right about something, pick the topic, whatever the topic is, markets, politics, people, whatever it is. If you're the only one out of 100 people that is right about something, you know what? In the world that we live in, you're wrong. That makes sense? Because if you're the only one, let's kind of take this right to markets here. If you're the only one that is short in a market on a tape that is very resilient and is moving higher, you're wrong. And the majority is going to win that battle. Now, you may say, you know what? Everybody else is stupid. Nobody knows what's going on. I know what's really happening. Now, you may be right somewhere down the road, but how much pain are you willing to endure to be right? How much pain are you looking to endure? Now, we can go back to the movie The Big Short. You know what? If you remember that movie, the main character was wrong. And this is in real life, too. We know this happened. But the situation was that this hedge fund went out and basically bet against the housing market and against the financial markets for years when, yes, he was right. And in the end, he profited handsomely. But before that, 2-3 years, I think it was maybe close to maybe 4 years in advance, he was getting hammered. His clients were getting hammered, losing money hand over fist. His reputation was on the line. Yes, in the end, he was right. I give you that. He did his homework. However, his timing could have been better. So think about that for a second. If his timing was even better, think about all the money he could have made even more, because if he would have had fewer losses on the way up. And what he did was a little bit differently with his CDS and the way that he bet on this. But bottom line was that, again, I think he would even admit to this, that yes, while he knew he was right and everything going into it, he was passionate about and he believed it, you know, how much longer could he have held? There have been cases time and time again that we've seen where people thought that something was going to happen, but you know what? They were just not able to hold out long enough until such a thing happened. So just be very careful as to putting in your own overlays into the markets, into the economy, and into what's going on, because that could be a difficult circumstance. Don't totally scrap them if you really believe that you're right about something, but based on not just emotion, based on empirical evidence, based on the actual information that comes out, based on the reports that everyone else is utilizing in their analysis. This way, you can't really get too hurt. At least if you're right, somehow down the road, you'll figure it out. You'll say, I believed I was right all along. Maybe you dipped your toes into that direction for some time, but you didn't go all in at that moment. You could always add on. You could always take away when it comes to markets and investing. So just a quick point about what's going on in terms of the economics right now. Things do look good. There's no question about that. I don't think any of us can argue unless you would like to bring up, well, it's a giant conspiracy. And then if that's your belief, you shouldn't be anywhere near these markets, whether it's true or not, by the way, okay? It could be very true that the markets are a giant conspiracy. And if that's true, and you believe that, by the way, and you believe it with all your heart and soul and all your mind, Don't you think that maybe you should be investing along with the conspiracy? Because if it is that large of a conspiracy, that obviously the people who are pulling the strings are so powerful, that why not just play along? On the other hand, if you do believe it's a conspiracy, that this thing won't last and there's no way to trust it, you know what? You're never going to be a good investor, even if you're right. Because you always believe that you're on the wrong side of this deal. So you have to trust something here. And whether or not we trust the reports or trust that other people believe the reports, if that's where you are with that, or trust the earnings information, or at least trust that others are believing this information, whatever it may be, think about it. Makes a lot of sense. In order to be successful here, you got to play the game. Now, again, I'm not making a judgment call of whether the game is rigged or not. That's not the point. If you want to play the game, you play by the rules. That's it. You can't play Monopoly, make up your own rules while everybody else is playing the right rules. Just not going to work. Just a thought. Just something to hang your hat on for a little while, just to ponder, just to, you know, wonder about. Yeah, I mean, and I'm sure I'll get some emails on this. By the way, if you do want to mention something to me, if you want to ask me a question, if you want to argue with me, go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com and you can simply click on the Ask Andrew button and then type away. I don't know if there's any limitation on how much you can type, but just try to keep it succinct. And, you know, tell me what you think about that. And if you're, in fact, one of those falling into the camp of, hey, I don't believe the data, therefore I'm not going to trust it, therefore I'm going to go against the data, just think about how much harm you could be doing to yourself, because everybody else in the room, you know, a lot of people in the room believe that the data is correct. Again, just something to think about. I'm not making a call on whether or not the data is correct. I believe the data. Do I believe like things like the China data? Not really. Do I believe that others believe the China data? Yes. So, okay. With that in mind, play along. Until such time as we're told otherwise, until such time that the masses believe something different, you play along. Think about it. Makes sense. All right, where do we go from here? I had a few things. I mentioned the quarterly market commentary. Next week we'll have, this week coming up. Watch my Twitter feed, which is at, or the little ampersand jobby there, Andrew Horowitz, that's my handle, just Andrew Horowitz, one word. We'll put a link on the website to download your copy of this quarter's market and economic commentary from Horowitz and Company. You can check that out. I mentioned the trigger charts replay. I'm just going down my list here. Did I mention the Investology replay? I don't know if I did. I highly encourage you to go watch the Investology replay. Go to investology.com. On the really cool advisor-crafted, technology-enhanced offering we put out, this is really cool. You know, if you wanted to invest with us in the past and you looked at things and you're like, oh, well, that minimum's there and maybe I can't. This is a $10,000 minimum. You can go there and actually go and work on your portfolio based on your risk tolerance, see how it changes depending on how you answer a variety of questions. Something that you really should check out over on investology.com. Don't forget that each and every week we get together with myself and John C. Dvorak for DH Unplugged. We're actually live and streaming on the web with a chat room that's available for you to participate in at 9 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays. We talk about some really fun things on there, the lighter side of business, the more reasonable side of business, as we call it. So make sure to go and check that out as well. Otherwise, we're going to end it here. I hope you're going to have a great week. Watch those earnings that are going to be coming out. Let's pick this up and talk about more how we see things next week. Oh, and kind of keep an eye on gold, by the way, while you're at it. I think there's some interesting things. We talked about that last week on the show, talking about some of the gold miners. And of course, you can check out all the weekly stock picks over on DH Unplugged, where we have a little game that John C. Dvorak and myself play on picking some stocks. You can see how those actually perform. And that's all right there on DH Unplugged. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you again next week.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.